Last time, on Tales of the Ironlands, Kalyra, Sophie's daughter, having fought the primordial who had abducted her father and lost, decided that she needed further help and made her way across the hinterlands to the west, about a day's travel, just over a day and a half, actually, to where she found the hut of a hermit, a woman named Alia Anor, and her apparently grandson, Tegan. When she arrived, Alia Anor, the wise woman, was very ill. However, thanks to her herbal skills, Kalyra was able to bring Alia Anor back to not full health, but certainly on the road to recovery. This was very useful, as it turns out that the wise woman Alia Anor, a very elderly woman from the first generation who settled the Ironlands, had a great deal of useful information, chief amongst which was that in order to effectively fight an Earth Primordial, Kalyra needs to use a bludgeoning weapon of some sort, such as a mace or a maul, which she does not currently have. In addition to that, she needs to seek out the Kokari, the shaman caste of the elf clans who live in the wildlands, in the hopes that they will be able to tell her more about what the Earth Primordial is doing to her father, and how, or whether, she can save him from that fate, whatever it may be. Somewhat recuperated from her fights, and with a new sense of purpose, Kalyra sets out to travel into the wildlands, the deep wilds. Now, we finished up last session with a couple of bookkeeping-type things, which was preparing her keen ritual for use, and swearing an iron vow to find a Kokari and learn about primordials. Before we proceed with today's session, I think I am going to mark progress on the quest to rescue my father. I now know a little more than I did before. I know that Earth Primordials can be fought, even though they remain extremely dangerous, and I have some leads to pursue in preparing myself to fight that terrible creature once more. Therefore, I'm going to mark progress. It is a formidable quest, so only one. And with that, I believe it's time to undertake a journey, starting out from the hut of Alia Anor, the wise woman, and heading into the deep wilds in search of an elf clan. Kalyra sets out to the southwest, and is going to make her roll. That is, I believe, a wits roll. Yes. She is not starting from a bonded community and thus gets no bonus on this. So, wits is +2. Alright, I have a weak hit. 1 + 2 is 3 versus a 2 and a 6. On a weak hit, I can mark progress at the cost of one supply. Alright, let's take care of that. Kalyra pushes steadily to the southwest, and although she keeps an eye out for useful resources, hopefully some early spring greens, she'd like to have some sorrel, but unfortunately doesn't seem to be much in the way of her path. She consumes some of her resources, some of the food she brought from Palenham, during the day, but finds nothing of any significance to replace it. As the sun begins setting, she looks for a place to make camp, and discovers that she has come probably to what seems to be the border of the deep wilds, which was not terribly far from Alia Anor's hut. Here the trees of the forest grow ever thicker and larger, previously she was primarily surrounded by small pines, small enough that she could clasp their trunks in her outstretched arms if she felt like it. Here, the trees are considerably larger and older. She cannot grasp one about the center. The mix of trees is still primarily coniferous, but they're large. In some places, it feels like she's walking through a cavernous open space with the occasional shaft of light striking down through an opening in the canopy above. Eventually, she locates an even larger tree than usual, one which towers over even its neighbors. It's sufficiently large that she doubts that three full-grown men could encircle it with their arms fully extended, and it seems to be hollow. She approaches cautiously and looks into it, but the hollow seems to be unoccupied. The faint smell of musty rot comes from within it. It's not terribly damp. Earthy, though. Satisfied that this will make a satisfactory camp for the evening, Kalyra sets about making camp. Rolling plus supply. Alright, my supplies are at 2, and I rolled a 6, versus a 10 and a 5. 6 plus 2 is 8, actually. So that's a weak hit. I get one of the benefits of making camp. I'm going to take plus 1 momentum, raising it to 4. The night passes uneventfully. The trees sound somewhat different in the breeze than the ones she's familiar with. All around her, the deep creaking of ancient wood swaying in the winds far above her head lulls Kalyra to sleep. In the morning, she makes breakfast, takes a look at the state of her supplies, and shakes her head. She is going to slow her journey somewhat in order to resupply. So, she's going to roll plus wits. Rolling at plus 2. Excellent. That is a total of 8 versus a 3 and a 5. For a strong hit, I gain plus 2 supply, raising it to 4. Kalyra is not familiar with all of the plants and animals that she encounters in this area of the forest, never having been to the deep wilds before. They seem to grow larger here. She catches sight of an owl perched high above her head. It's obviously sleeping during the day, but what really strikes her about it is that it must be at least half again as large as any other owl she has ever seen. She admires it from a distance for a moment, and then continues onward, but before she does, she discovers that at the base of the tree that the owl is inhabiting, there is a large patch of valuable medicinal herbs that she recognizes from her training, and she takes a moment to harvest those. Later in the afternoon, just before she begins seriously traveling again, she also comes across a patch of wild sorrel, which is what she was hoping to find, as well as some mushrooms that she recognizes as safe to eat, I think that's really it. Once she feels a little better about the state of her supplies, she is going to continue heading to the southwest. All right, strong hit. 8 versus a 1 and a 2. I get to mark progress. And I think I'm actually going to trade plus 1 momentum for plus 1 supply. Kalyra is not sure exactly where to go. She knows that there are elves who live in this forest. She knows they must be here. She doesn't quite know where to go to find them, however, and so she spends some time going in broad, slow, not loops, but curves, back and forth. Her forward progress is less than it might otherwise have been, but she gets a greater sense of the terrain, and there's not a lot of time. She's worried that the longer she spends out here looking for the elves, the harder it will be to rescue her father, and so she hurries as she travels. Marking progress. Between her efforts at resupplying this morning and the day's travel, she feels as though she's made good progress, which is heartening. She comes to another landmark, which is, in this case, a vast river which is flowing southeast. She approaches it and it crosses her path at a diagonal. It is larger than any other river she has ever seen, far enough that she can't quite get a stone across it if she hurls it as hard as she can. It's rushing quite quickly. She's a little taken aback, but it looks like a good stopping place. At least there's a fresh supply of good water, and perhaps she can do some fishing in the morning. She backs up from the water a little bit and finds a place to camp in a small opening off to one side where the trees have pulled back a little bit from the water and left a broad, smooth opening. As she settles down for the night, Kalaira builds a small fire and sits on a log she has pulled over. Now, Alianor told me that I would have to introduce myself to the elves by announcing my name and a truth about myself. What could that be? I mean, my name is true, I think, but maybe that's not the sort of thing. Anyway, I have to tell them my name. I could tell them that my hair is red. That's true. But again, perhaps that seems insufficient. As she ponders, I think I am going to ask the Oracle to tell me a truth about Kalaira. I am going to go to the theme table and just roll against that. Now, I'm going to reserve the right to reject or modify any result here, because, of course, there's very little that's as personal as a truth about one's own character. Let's see if I like what I get. And if not, I will just pick something from the list. Well, I rolled a 48, which is debt. The second time I've rolled that in this campaign. Actually, I picked it last time. I think I'm going to keep that. Yeah. How do I work that into her, though? All right. I know. Kalaira sits by the fire, and her thoughts turn back to what the primordial said in the cave. It told her that the debt must be paid. What debt? Whose debt? Is it Palinham's debt? Is it my father's debt? Is it the Earth Primordial's debt? Who owes something to whom? If it is my father's debt, perhaps I could pay it for him. Her face sort of falls at this. If it is indeed her father's debt, then she has seen how he is paying for it, with the flesh of his body, and perhaps his mind. She is not thrilled at the prospect of volunteering to take his place and pay the debt herself. She shivers a little bit. Well, maybe that's my truth. My father owes a debt that I'm afraid to pay. And with that troubling thought, she goes to bed. I have a 5, 3 plus 2, versus a 1 and a 2. So, I have a strong hit on this make camp, and I'm going to choose 2. I think... Well, her health is at full, her spirit is at full, her supply is at 3. Oh, excuse me, it's actually, I was rolling supply, not wits there, so it's higher. 1 higher than that. Plus 1 momentum, and I think plus 1 on undertake a journey tomorrow, because the rest of this doesn't seem terribly relevant right now. So that puts my momentum at 6.
Ooh, I've never had it so high.
In the morning, Kalyra pulls out the fine line that she carries in one of the side pockets of her travel bag, along with a tiny iron fish hook, and she spends a little time fishing to resupply her food for the day. So here's a resupply roll. Rolling at plus 2. I have a 6 on the die for a total of 8 versus a 6 and a 9. That is up to plus 2 supply at minus 1 momentum each. Yeah, I'm going to top off my supply and drop to 4 momentum. The fish practically throw themselves onto her hook, and in short order she has enough food for the day, and unfortunately fish doesn't keep very well. But it will certainly see her through the day. And then, after a couple of hours of fishing in the broad white waters that rush past the stones of the river, she decides to head upstream on the theory that perhaps there will be a settlement somewhere along the banks of the river that is so well supplied with fish and fresh water. Rolling at plus 2. Actually, plus 3, because I took one from the camp last night. Which is good. I got a 2 plus 2... plus 1 is 5 versus a 3 and an 8. That is a weak hit. I mark progress and minus 1 supply. That would be the fish getting eaten along the way. The river heads northwest. Kalyra is a little worried that she's going to follow it all the way back out of the deep wilds and into the hinterlands, and indeed, after most of a day's travel, the trees begin to thin out again. Regrettably, there has not been any sign of any kind of settlement, elf, human, or otherwise. But as she catches sight once more of the hogback that marks the southern boundary of the hinterlands, she comes to a halt. Oh well. And makes camp by the river once more. I have a 6 plus 2 is 8. Oh no, 6 plus 4, because I rolling supply, is 10. And I will... It's a weak hit versus a 10 and a 2. So I'll take plus 1 momentum. Back up to 5. In the morning, Kalaira is going to cross the river. She wants to go back down on the opposite side. It's still quite deep, and the waters are strong. She trots downstream a little ways until she finds a spot where it is slightly broader and shallower, and then she carefully seals up her backpack, rolls up her trousers, takes her boots off and puts them in the backpack as well, and begins crossing the river. And this is going to be a face danger roll, I believe, because the waters are comparatively deep and quite swift. So I think this is probably going to be an iron roll withstand the cold of the water. It is still early spring, and this water flows down from the mountains to the north. It can't have been more than 2 or 3 days since much of this water was snow on the peaks. So, rolling iron, +2. And I have a miss with a 4 + 2 = 6 versus a 7 and an 8. I must pay the price. All right, rolling on the table. I got an 88. It wastes resources. Despite Kalaira's careful preparations for crossing the river, she slips partway through and dunks herself into the water. She emerges gasping moments later, only to discover that some of her supplies have worked their way out of the pack and fallen into the water. It looks like it's a packet of her food, the last of the oatmeal. Has slipped out. She makes a snatch at the pouch before it sinks under the water and is carried away on the stream. Well, so much for the oatmeal, she says, hauling herself out of the river on the far side and stripping down and wringing out her clothes. It's cold in that river, but not as cold as clammy, wet clothing would be in the steady breeze that runs amongst the trees. Suffering -1 supply. Now, this was just the beginning of the day. She waits a little while for her clothes to dry out. Fortunately, the interior of her pack was not submerged long enough that the rest of her belongings were really soaked. There are a few wet pieces, particularly near the top, but she went down and stood back up almost immediately, so it's not truly soaked. But she takes a little time to dry things out, spreading them on a rock at the side of the river anyway. The wind ruffles her red hair as she waits for things to dry. Grows impatient, however, begrudging every moment of time, and redresses and packs her gear up while it is still damp, and begins making her way south again along the banks of the river. Undertake a journey. This is wits, I believe. One of these days I will remember all of these things instead of having to look them up every time. Yes, it is wits. So I have a total of 3. 1 + 2 = 3. Versus a 3 and a 2. So that's a weak hit. I get to mark progress at -1 supply. Lyra finishes up the last of the fish that she caught yesterday. It keeps a little better once you've cooked it, but still not for terribly long. As she walks along the banks of the river. I wonder if this river has a name, she says. I don't think I've heard of it before. Or if I have, I don't know which river this is. Should have paid more attention to the bards when they visited. Ah, well. And I get to mark progress. At the end of the day, she finds herself in a familiar spot, looking across the river in the remains of the sun as it is westering away. She can make out her camp spot from the previous day when she was here before. Oh well. I think she is going to attempt to resupply by fishing again. That seemed to work pretty well before, so here we go. She got a 7. 5 plus 2 is 7 versus a 1 and a 10. So that is a weak hit. I can up to plus 2 supply at minus 1 momentum. Each supply is running a little low. I'm just going to take 1. Increasing supply to 3 and momentum down to 4. And then I'm going to make camp, because at the moment that seems to be my best way of building momentum. I hope I find them soon, she says. Making camp. I have a strong hit. 2 plus 2 is 4 versus a 2 and a 3. Excellent. I will take plus 1 momentum. And I will also take plus 1 on Undertake a Journey tomorrow. The nights are getting a little warmer. Or at least so she fondly hopes. Certainly seems that way to her. But perhaps it's just a trick of her mind after having spent much of the day shivering in her chilly clothing. In the morning, she makes another attempt at fishing before moving along to resupply once again. And it is a weak hit. She's got a 4 versus a 1 and an 8. So trade momentum for supply at 1 to 1. Once again, I will trade plus, I'll just do 1, raising my supply to 4 and lowering my momentum to 4. Enough, she says, hauling in a fish which she has for breakfast. It's nothing quite so good as mountain salmon caught fresh from the stream and flipped straight into the fire. With a full belly, she shoulders her pack and begins trotting southeast along the banks of the river once more. That is it wits? It's gotta be wits, right? Wits? Yes, wits. At plus 1 because of making camp success. So, 5 plus 2 is 7, plus 1 is 8, versus a 6 and a 7. That is a strong hit. I get to mark progress. Bringing my progress on this dangerous journey, which wasn't actually all that dangerous, to 10. Thus, about halfway through the afternoon, Kalyra hears a sound, a faint rustle. She turns and finds herself staring directly at the spear held by a figure wearing a mask, a wooden mask, seamed with the lines of the grain. She raises both of her hands and she says, "Greetings, warrior. I am Kalyra Sophie's daughter, and I fear to pay my father's debt." and she's going to make a progress move to reach her destination. So, unless I roll double tens here, I think this will work. An 8 and a 1. Success. The impassive figure waits a long moment, but then the spearhead lowers, and its owner stands a little straighter. Greetings, Kalaira Sophie's daughter. I am Sarla of the clan Bentu. What brings you to our lands?
Whew, Kalaira says.
Sarla, it is an honor to meet you. I need to consult a Kokari on a matter related to my father's debt, the one that I fear to pay. Interesting, says Sarla. So you come in peace? I do, says Kalaira. Very well. Let us return to the village. Be prepared to introduce yourself there as you did to me. Very well, says Kalaira. Following Sarla into the forest, away from the rushing waters of the river, in no more than 15 minutes' travel, a rather uncomfortable travel, for Sarla makes no overtures towards further conversation, and Kalaira deems it perhaps wisest simply to travel in silence. But after a good 15 minutes of walking, they come to an elven settlement. For a moment, she doesn't even recognize it for what it is. In Kalaira's experience, settlements are defined by structures, usually a palisade, a wooden palisade around the village to keep out dangerous beasts or raiders. And within them, the thatched huts or the larger wood stave buildings that are used for communal space of one sort or another. An elven village is nothing like that at all. And so when Sarla stops and says, "Welcome to the home of Clan Bantu," she looks around in puzzlement, and then Sarla gestures upwards, and looking up, Kalaira discovers that there is an entire village which has been built into the trees high up in the canopy. Swinging rope bridges connect platforms which look as though they have not so much been built as grown from the trees. The branches that support most of the platforms have clearly grown into the shapes that they hold now. Up in the trees, she can see figures moving about, more elves. Most of the adults wear masks of one sort, but she catches sight of a few children who look down at her from a good 60 to 80 feet up, with curiosity in their faces, very pale white faces, before their parents hurriedly push them away. "Go on," says Sarla. "Oh, yes, of course. Greetings, people of the Bantu clan. I am Kalaira Sophie's daughter, and I fear to pay my father's debt." The small crowd, if you can call it a crowd when it is people lining the edges of the walkways between buildings, nod towards her, the masks dipping and coming back up far above her. Sarla says, "You have been acknowledged. Come, I will take you to the elder." "This way," Sarla says. She leads Kalaira to a central tree far larger than any of the others. If Kylaira was impressed by the trees she'd found earlier in the day, this one is even larger by a major margin. It must be a good 20-25 feet in diameter. It's a huge tree. Around the perimeter of the platform which extends outwards from it, Kylaira could see that there are rope ladders hanging. Sarla takes her to one and runs her spear through a couple of loops over her one across her shoulder, and she begins to climb up the rope. "You are lucky that I found you," Sarla remarks as she climbs. "Many of us here do not speak your tongue." "Oh, well, that is fortunate," Kylaira said. It hadn't even occurred to her that the elves might speak a different language. She flushes a little red as she follows Sarla up the ladder. At the top, she can see the layout of the village a little more closely. The primary dwellings seem to be built along the central branches, the central trunks, just where the branches split off from some of the largest trees in the area. And they spin out, bridges spin out to subsidiary trees from this, the tree she is at, which is the central, the largest tree of the lot. Looking around, she finds that she is surrounded by all of the elves in the area who are looking at her. It's a little spooky. All of the adults have masks on, of all of wood. She can see their eyes gleaming through the holes in the masks. Over to one side, she can see one child that has not yet been moved away. A little boy who tugs on his father's shirt and says something in a language that she doesn't recognize. And the father leans down and answers him in a quiet voice and then takes his hand and leads him away from this stranger to the village, who has been polite but has not been approved as yet. "This way," Sarla says, and leads Kylaira partially around the circular platform to the far side, where it becomes apparent that the center of this tree is open and hollow and has been converted into a room. Sarla pauses by the door calls out, "Sarla Ashmask brings a guest to see the elder. She has introduced herself well as Kylaira Sophie's daughter, and she will tell you her truth." "Yes, I am Kylaira Sophie's daughter, and I fear to pay my father's debt." There are two guards standing just inside the opening. They nod at her with impassive masks. It's very difficult to read these people when you can't see their faces. Kylaira is quite unnerved as she walks past them. One of them points at her sword and says something in his own tongue. Sarla turns to her and says, "You are required to leave your weapon behind before you can see the elder." "Oh, very well," Kylaira says, and a little reluctantly, it must be said, but with no ill grace, she unbuckles her sword belt and leaves it propped against the wall by the entry. Stepping into the interior, Kylaira discovers that the interior of this tree is lit by strange glowing flowers that are emitting a pale golden light. Each one is about the size of her head, and they curl up from pots which have been shaped from clay and placed at the bottom of the wall, and wooden pegs have been driven into holes in the wall, providing space for the vines to climb up. The light is more than adequate. It shines more steadily than a candle or a fire would, and in within, she can see that this is probably a communal space. Whether they were expecting her or not is not clear to her, but there is an elderly-looking elf, or as far as Kalyra can tell, an elderly-looking elf. He is wearing a mask of ash gray, and his hair is pure white behind it, and she can see sharp black eyes peering out of the mask at her. He is seated, cross-legged, on a low stool. "Welcome, Kalyra, Sophie's daughter, who fears to pay her father's debt. Why have you come to the Bantu tribe?"
"Greetings, honored elder," Kalyra says, noting that he has not introduced himself. "I am here in the hopes of speaking with the Kokari of your tribe. I need advice. The woman Alia'anor, the wise woman who lives in the hinterlands northeast of here, recommended that I seek out a Kokari and speak with him or her to learn more about my father's state of affairs."
"I see," says the old elf. And he demands further details, and Kalyra relates the full details of her story to date, omitting nothing, including the fact that she is death-touched and owes a great debt to the Black Lady. The elder watches her impassively as she speaks. And I'm going to give her a compel role. Now, she's not trying to trick him, and she's not trying to intimidate him. She is appealing for his aid. So this is going to be using heart as the relevant stat. Okay. Rolling at plus three.
You dear. I have rolled a 1 on the die for a total of 4 versus a 9 and a 4. I have missed. I must pay the price. The obvious price is that the elder will not help her. The elder listens to her declarations in chilly silence, and as she finishes, he allows that silence to extend, and after an uncomfortable amount of time, the mask tilts slightly to the side, and his voice emerges from it, and he says, "The Bantu tribe wants nothing to do with one who owes a debt to the Black Lady. You must continue your journey onwards, and perhaps you will find another tribe who is foolish enough to offer you aid."
"Oh, I don't have much time. I don't know how long..."
"That is none of our concern," says the elder.
"May I at least stay for the night?
and travel on in the morning. And she is going to try another compel to ask permission simply for a night's lodging. Rolling hard again. 5 versus 3 and 2. Never let it be said that the Bantu are inhospitable to those who present themselves politely, as you have done, Kalaira Sophie's daughter. You are welcome to stay for the night, but in the morning you must move on. And as if on a signal, both Sarla and the two guards, you know, crack the butts of their spears against the wooden floor, and Kalaira gets the distinct impression that that is that. There's nothing more she can say that will sway him, and she will gain nothing here but a night's rest. Come, says Sarla, I will show you to a place where you may rest. Sarla takes her outside and leads her along the swaying rope bridges, which, it must be said, Kalaira has never been this high in her entire life, barring perhaps looking over the edge of a cliff in the forest or something, but that was not nearly as unsteady as walking along the swaying surface of a rope bridge high in the trees. She is quite trepidatious about this, and I think I'm going to roll a face danger move here. Oh, also I gained +1 momentum from that second compel, putting me at +5, and I can make a gather information at check at +1. Which I will do in a moment. First, let's face danger, which is going to be edge, because navigating a swaying rope bridge in the increasing darkness as we are approaching evening is quite challenging. Rolling at +1, I have a total of 4 versus a 5 and a 7. I have not succeeded in this. Kalaira sets foot upon the swaying rope bridge. She wobbles slightly and takes another step, and then her terror gets the better of her, and she scrambles backwards onto the safety of the platform, looking a little white in the face. Sarla looks back in amusement. Kalaira flushes and looks away, and she's going to try again. I think this time she's going to roll. This is an act of courage, stepping back onto the bridge that terrifies her so. So at this time, I'm going to roll hard for that face danger. Much better. I've got a 6 plus 3 is 9 versus a 5 and a 2. So Kalaira breathes in and out a couple of times, and then closes her eyes and steps out with her arms extended and creeps her way across the bridge. She reaches the far side, feels the platform beneath her feet, and opens her eyes again to find Sarla looking at her. The ashwood mask nods faintly. And then Sarla says, I had thought to put you in one of the further rooms, but I don't think I need to torture you that much. This way, and she leads the way up another rope ladder, which has been strung just on the surface of the trunk. It goes up to a small wooden room, which has been constructed along the curve of the trunk. You may stay here for the evening. I hope you have supplies. If you need to cook anything, however, we have a strict rule against fires in the houses, on account of we don't wish to burn down our village or the canopy of the trees about us. So if you need to cook anything, let me know. I have some jerky, Kalira says. I'll just eat that. Very well, says Sarla, and disappears, or begins to disappear. Wait, says Kalira. Sarla pauses. I wonder, the elder has said that I must move on in the morning, and I will, but is there anything that I can do to increase my chances the next time I find some of your people? I have not been death-touched very long, and know this. Actually, I better roll for that before I say anything. This is going to be a gather information check, and it's, I believe, plus heart. No, plus wits. Plus one if bonded, which I am not. So, rolling at plus two, plus one from the successful compel earlier. So, I have a four total. One on the die, plus two, plus one is four. Versus a four and a 10. Now, I could burn momentum in order to cancel that 4. But I don't think I'm going to. And so all that Sarla says is, "Know this, Kalira Sophie's daughter, who fears to pay her father's debt. The death-touched are not generally welcome in among my people. Walk carefully." And that is all she gets. And Kalira looks about the room, discovers there is a bedroll. It's not even a bed, per se. It's merely a large person-length pillow, essentially, which has been rolled up and tucked into one corner. She unrolls it and takes her rest after a cold dinner of jerky. And in the morning, awakes to find that Sarla is there and waiting for her. They are not wasting any time in getting her out of this village. Sarla says nothing but gestures towards the door, and Kalira nods and gathers her things and rolls up the bedroll and puts it back where she found it. Getting back down is something of a trial, but is less nerve-wracking than it had been the night before. It's a little easier to see in a bright early morning sun than it had been with the shadows of evening encroaching the previous night. Kalira makes her way down out of the trees, and as Sarla leads her to the edge of the village, she says, "I thank you for your hospitality, and I wish you and yours all the best. Go well, Kalira, Sophie's daughter," says Sarla, "but Kalira gets the impression that that is a stiff formality, not a heartfelt wish. And so Kalira leaves the village of the Bantu clan and returns to making her way southeast along the river, which soon curves and begins heading southwest. And that, I think, is where we're going to call the session. Poof. That was not a lot of progress there. Oh well.